Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Impact Vest podcast, transformative global innovation in a new era of impact. I'm Aisha Williams, the founder and CEO of Impact Vest, and along with our guest host, we aim to inspire and motivate towards collective positive global impact to solve our world's most pressing challenges in sustainability. With each episode, we will engage in insightful conversations with global changemakers, visionaries, and sustainability activists who wish to build a more sustainable and resilient future. Join us now as we create the future of impact.
Welcome to the Impact Vest podcast. I am Jennifer Allen, the Managing Director of Impact Vest Giving. Today, we are delighted to have with us a remarkable leader, Dr. Charlotte Felix Faure, the founder of the Inclusive Entrepreneurship Academy in South Africa. Dr. Charlotte is also an Associate Professor of Entrepreneurship at IDREC Business School in Lyon, France, and Visiting Professor in Entrepreneurship and Institutional Change at Leuphana University in Germany, and Associate Researcher at Ferré Chair Grenoble. She is the director and a board member of the International Social Capital Association. We at Impact Vest Giving have had the distinct honor of partnering with Dr. Charlotte as she fosters entrepreneurship among especially women in the townships of South Africa, creating profound impact in the community. We are excited to learn more about her journey, the inspiration behind her organization, and her vision for the future. So let's dive in. So Dr. Charlotte, can you start out by sharing a little bit about yourself and your background?
Okay. Thank you very much for having me. It's a real honor and a pleasure to share what I'm doing. So I was born and bred in South Africa, in Johannesburg, on the West Rand. So basically, did all my schooling in South Africa, and I went to the University of Cape Town, and I studied sciences, bachelor's of science in chemistry. That was during the apartheid years. Actually, I turned 18 that year, my first year of university, and this is the first year all of South Africa could vote. You know, people who were from 18 years old. So I happened to turn 18 years old. It was the month of April in 1994. So it was quite exciting and a very also, you know, delicate time in our country. Even my parents after, you know, I mean, at their age, it was the first time for them to vote. So our country was transitioning from the apartheid system into democracy. And President Nelson Mandela was the first democratic president. However, you know, as we all know, that things don't change. You know, people's living conditions and the environment doesn't necessarily change overnight, even though things may change on paper. So even myself, I wasn't able to graduate with my bachelor's degree because of finances and accessing funding, you know, like scholarships, you know, coming from a Black community where we didn't have any resources during apartheid. But in any case, I mean, you know, I was able to go and work, found a job. And then this is where I actually went into the business field, because in South Africa at the time, doing science or medicine was much more expensive. You know, I'm comparing with France, because France, the business schools are private and very expensive. But in South Africa, it's more the sciences, engineering, and all of these STEM a line of study. So I found a job as a waitress, and I did part-time studying. I did marketing, I did advertising, management studies, you know, for a few years. And while I was working, so And then at some point, I met my husband in Johannesburg. We lived in South Africa for 3 years, and then we moved to France while I was finalizing my last year of advanced diploma in marketing. And then when I got to France, you know, starting my life over, and I definitely wanted to go to university again, you know, do things that I love and I knew. And I always had in my mind that a mind is a terrible thing to waste. So I would really love to use my potential. And especially knowing where I come from and like growing up in an environment where opportunities were scarce. So coming to France, the university is free because in South Africa, we had to pay for everything, you know, for everything. Even when I went to University of Cape Town, I went just holding my results, my high school results. I didn't even have any financing. I knocked on the door, like, I want to study. So I really had to push the door, and I got a loan, a student loan, to go through that. So anyway, in France, I went to, it was so really, I can say, a blessed experience, because I found a good business school, a Grenoble Ecole de Management, one of the top business schools in France. And I saw that they had English programs, and I spoke to them, and then they actually contacted the University of Cape Town directly. I didn't have to start anything from scratch. So my credits were transferred, and I found myself only having to do a few modules of the bachelor's degree in business. And then I went to do a master's degree, which went absolutely amazing. I had a great experience. And then I went on to work for Hewlett Packard as a marketing manager in Grenoble. But I always, you know, when I went back, usually went back at least once a year, back to South Africa, I saw how, you know, even after apartheid was abolished, it looked like people were not progressing, you know, especially that the South African politics, they were positioning themselves now with developed countries wanting to, you know, this capitalist kind of environment, which was basically leaving the poor of the poorest behind. So in a system whereby they want to compete with developed nations in a competitive environment whereby people didn't have like the same, when people are not starting off on the same footing, you know, there are some parts of the population which is more privileged, they are able to, you know, to take opportunities that present themselves in an open market like that. But some people couldn't, because they're still lacking in many things. So my heart was like, I really need to do something. Okay, I go back, I see what people in the townships or rural areas, how they're trying to get by, you know, using the knowledge they have or the little skills they have. But actually, because South Africa and even Africa is so rich in culture, in artisanal creations, so I decided to create a platform here in Europe and to go get. So I opened up a concept store, working with crafters, with designers, young designers. So I went, I remember it was in 2009. I was just pregnant with my first child. That's when I left HP. Actually, I left HP in April. And in May, I decided I'm going to do this. I remember I booked a flight to South Africa in June for a month. And I was driving the whole country, going from place to place, meeting people and looking at what they're doing. And so I met a lot of amazing people, young people, and I created this store, giving them a platform to be able to export And I would even export from France as well into Europe and even into the US. I remember I supplied a store in California, like an ethical store for interior design. So for 14 years, I was able to do that, supporting families. And some of the people, if I can show you the websites, they are big. People mm-hmm. have started with in one young man. He's actually doing the New York Fashion Week. You know, like he's yeah. that big. Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. Because, you know, these people were depending on tourist seasons and they would just stand by the street and sell. So we really worked out branding. We worked out, you know, product quality. And the more I was learning about the European market, I would help them to be able to be more professional too. And I was able to supply big stores here, even in Paris. At the same time, I mean, I wasn't, because of the demand, I was getting so much demand here because some of the people were still struggling, you know, to satisfy the demand that I had. I had to open up the platform to even more people who are, I would say, more developed or more privileged in a way. So when I observed designers the suppliers who were coming from this privileged backgrounds, one person would be just, you know, start a year, and within 1 year they are so operational, look like they've been doing this for 10 years. And I would look at another person who I find very skilled in their trade, you know, especially there's this young man. He's a ceramic designer, beautiful stuff. But for like 12 years, you know, his business is not picking up the way it should. So that made me curious of what goes on, you know, with these two population groups in South Africa. Why is it that people who actually do have the talent and the skills, they're still struggling to make it economically, you know, to be emancipated, to really be successful. And that's when I decided to do a PhD. And then that was my field of research, you know, looking at. So I wanted to look at the effects of apartheid, oppression on the minds of people, you know, even though they may have, you can give them everything, because the government was also providing some programs to support, you know, but there wasn't any it didn't look like there was any return on investment. I went, the government started, they put some business incubators in these communities, and they were always empty, and I didn't understand, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, my aim is, I thought, I'm from this community, you know. If someone like me doesn't do anything, who's going to do it? You know, it looks
absolutely.
Like, yes, the young people, the ones born after 1994, you know, when there was already democracy in there. You know, when I was interviewing even young women, the hopelessness, it was really disheartening, you know, like they don't, and someone would say, oh, but I'm from a township, I'm nothing, you know, like this kind of...
Dr. Charlotte, you have had such an amazing journey, and you have shared with us, you know, some of the challenges that you've faced yet overcome. And now that you are paying it forward, it is so inspiring to hear you talk about what has driven you, how you've accomplished, how you've overcome, and how you are now paying it forward to women in the township. I am truly inspired by, you know, what you are sharing with us today. And so we can get a sense for some of the things that are really driving you to creating this Entrepreneurship Academy.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about some of the projects and programs that you're doing with the Academy.
So the Academy is really in its infancy. This is after my PhD and, you know, getting the results of the study, the state of entrepreneurship, and because of what we look at to be able to be entrepreneurial, to have the entrepreneurial mindset. I actually saw that apartheid, I mean, I'm using theories and institutions, formal institutions, informal institutions, the impact of the formal institutions, like these are the norms and the values and culture. So how they can have this long-term impact on people. So I just decided that I need to establish an educational institution that is going to address those needs, you know, because we have institutions in South Africa. We have education, you know, but the issue is that South Africa is a traumatized country. And people keep failing. People keep, despite what you can put in front of them. You know, that's why I was saying when I was speaking to people and going there, it looks like there's just this big fat elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about. So the Academy has put together programs that we look at one of the main resources. It's a Paulo Freire's educational model. This was an educator based in Brazil. He wrote a book on the pedagogy of the oppressed. So he's explaining how actually one needs as a teacher, how we need to position ourselves with people like who've gone through a lot, you know, gone through trauma. And to be able to give them back their self-confidence. So I just wanted to give that foundation through teaching entrepreneurship, because we need entrepreneurs. There's a very high level of youth unemployment. It's up to 60%.
Wow.
In Africa. So the youth are outside there. It's really disheartening. So
it's great to
it's challenging.
No, I was just applauding your courage and, you know, acknowledging the importance of your understanding of the culture of where you're doing the work, right? So you are from South Africa, you see, and then you take action. And that takes a lot of courage, notwithstanding the difficulty of the situation, but adding to the solution, creating this environment that will empower the township youth and provide options for employment. Fantastic.
Exactly. So you see, it wouldn't even just necessarily be for them to create a business at the end. Though we're going to be establishing a business incubator. So it's to really create this entrepreneurial mindset, have grow the self-efficacy, you know, and feel worthy and capable of taking in charge, you know, their lives.
Absolutely.
If they decide to I'm going to work in this field. I mean, even within employment, there are people within companies that come up with innovations, that come up with, these are intrapreneurs, you know, like as in INTRA, intrapreneurs. And that's where companies are able at times to do spin-offs just to exploit new opportunities and come up with new products, because they have these dynamic people within the companies. And that's how economies grow. That's where there's more employment, you know.
How will you measure the impact of the work that is being done? You know, there's likely to be a lot of initiatives and programs as you evolve and become. How will you assess and measure impact of the work that's being done?
Well, the impacts, there will be qualitative matrix and quantitative ones.
Makes sense.
Because we already have a specific program in place, which even involves design thinking, you know, adapting design thinking methods into the education.
I want to attend your academy.
Yeah, why not? So in terms of quantitative matrix, you know, of course, they are the classical ones. We will look, of course, at startup creation and success rates and the survival rates of the startups and the number of startups that achieve significant milestones. And bearing in mind that whatever business that is started, we are contextualizing entrepreneurship. You know, it's not entrepreneurship according to how it's defined. You know, the definitions that we have in entrepreneurship literature, it's from research in America and in Europe, mainly America. So when you bring the government, just take these already, concepts that are already, they were established somewhere else, and they want to implement them in an environment like South African townships, where conditions are completely different, the context is completely different, and we expect to produce that a success that we have seen in Silicon Valley, because the government is talking about the fourth industrial revolution, you know, AI, this to this population here. You know, whereby the education system of apartheid was completely low, very low, because people were trained to be servants, you know, servant jobs, to be maids, to be house help and gardening at the time. So the schools, even though there's a bit of improvement, the public schools are really not very good.
Yeah, this is one of those examples where it is said that culture eats strategy for breakfast every day. You know, yes. It is supremely important to understand the cultural relevance so that you can contextualize what it is that you are doing. And it's not a one-size-fit-all model for any of these things. So, so very relevant. Thank you for bringing that forward.
You know, well-being, such a big thing for me, because you know, 2 years ago, I went, because when I go when I go there, when I have time, well, I try to go with this community leader to high schools, and we just to go and give a motivational talk. And one morning we arrived, because they have an assembly gathering just on Friday mornings. And one morning we arrived and we were told that the school was mourning a 13-year-old girl who committed suicide, you know, 13-year-old girl who couldn't handle life any longer. It's really extreme. So I thought, there is no way I can just focus on my own little life and not do something, you know, because it doesn't look like anything, you know, significant or anything impactful is taking place. So I'm going to try ways. I'm working with researchers, different fields and experts in education. And, you know, we are putting together something and we're going to be measuring. The well-being is a big thing for me. I would like to be able to offer meals. Because when I was visiting these township incubators while I was collecting my PhD data, many of them were hungry. They were working hungry, you see. They needed the money because some of, you know, this the Johannesburg is big. So some of these incubators were not even within, you know, they were on the outskirts. So they need to take transport. So the last money they have is just for transport to get there. And I remember one young man telling me, I would rather be doing this and just, you know, try and do my best for my future. Like, it's fine if I don't eat, but just do my best. There are no jobs. Mm-hmm. I need to do something.
The hopelessness and the trauma. And yet, look at the response that you are bringing hope. Again, I'm inspired.
Yeah, I've spoken to the local authorities. And unfortunately, the building that they have been promised, it's been a year to be handed over. I'm still waiting, you see. So, yeah, so I'm just wondering whether I should just, you know, get, is it better just to, you know, build or just, even the building that I was offered, it's not enough, it's not big enough, but they had said, you know, start with this and then we can see if we can have a land where you can build the academy and the incubator. So okay. This is still a, yeah.
So it sounds like, you know, some work to be done, some assessments, some new relationships perhaps that will help to carry forward your vision. Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, where you see the academy in the next 3 to 5 years on top of, you know, the land and building?
What's the vision? I have applied for the land. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky to have an architect husband who has designed schools, you know, in different places. So I do have that help, you know, just to, in terms of, you know, how things should be in a schooling environment, resources and everything. So I've applied for land and basically I was offered this building. The aim is to be opening the grand opening in January. South African school year, it's the calendar year from January to the end of the year to November, because the summer break is in December, you see. When it's winter in the Northern Hemisphere, it's summer mm-hmm. in the Southern Hemisphere. So the school year starts in January. So I'm really aiming at putting in place running the program in January.
It's a very short horizon. Lots of work, I'm sure, will be happening between now and then.
Yeah. And I've been working. I mean, I've been yes. working for a couple of months already. So, I don't want to wait, you know. Yes. I don't want to wait because so things like this, I don't want to be discouraged. I don't want to be discouraged and wait too long to implement. It's really important.
Well, we are here to support. We understand the mission. We understand the impact that having this institution will have on the community. And so as we kind of wrap things up a little bit, are there any other upcoming programs or events that you are particularly excited about that you want to share with us? We'd love to hear about any of your future initiatives or events on the horizon. And also, you know, what can the supporters and our community look forward to in the near future?
I'm planning on, you know, because I'm starting in one community, you know, this academy. But, you know, the dream is to have this multiplied in other.
Of course, scale matters.
Exactly, for impact. So I will be in South Africa in December, and the aim is to go do some stock taking with the entrepreneurs in this community. It's called Randfontein. I would like to start this like a market, you know, of where people can support each other's businesses. You see, with apartheid, because the townships didn't have anything. It was they were like hostels where workers could just sleep while they go work for the rich areas. They were put on the outskirts of the cities. So there was nothing other than one clinic and maybe a few schools, you know. People always have to take paid transport to go to buy clothes. So poor people have to still spend money just to go grocery shopping, whatever, buy whatever their needs are. But my dream is to get everybody together and organize, just for the entrepreneurs that are already there, to create this market, food market, clothing, whatever, jewelry, just make this dynamic economic ecosystem, like secular, kind of a secular business environment, So I do have a few people already there, like my high school friends and some community leaders. I will keep you in. I'll communicate.
Yes, we would love to hear more.
I'll send the details, but I think it would be good. For example, I was there in April and I brought back some amazing fruit juices from a small farmer there in the community. They plant their own carrots, fruits, and they transform them into juice already. And they mix them up. These are health juices with like turmeric, you know, carrot and turmeric, ginger and carrot, or green juicing. So this was quite encouraging. And so just to help, because I'm still actually helping people to export, you see. I'm still giving a platform. So whoever would be developing amazing products, I have a network of buyers that I can still help them to grow their brands outside of the country. So I'm still kind of a buyer. Yeah. Cause I usually, when I do that, I pay them upfront because they need the money.
Fantastic work. So as we are closing out our session here today, Dr. Charlotte, I just want to say thank you. Thank you so very much for making time for our conversation. We have been to school. We've come face to face with the remnants of apartheid and the infectious courage of one entrepreneur who is aspiring to scale entrepreneurship in the townships. We do look forward to hearing from you some more and more about the Inclusive Entrepreneurship Academy in South Africa. So thank you. Thank you so very much for being here with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it's been our pleasure. And to our listeners, a reminder that you can find additional information about ImpactVest Giving on our website at www.impactvest.com. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the ImpactVest podcast, Transformative Global Innovation in a New Era of Impact. Join us next week for another episode and become part of our ImpactVest newsletter community, where you will receive all of the latest updates about our work in this new era of innovative impact finance. See you next week as we create the future of finance at ImpactVest.